And now, Jonathan Robinson, founder of Been There Coffee Company, joining me in studio as we talk basically the brew of coffee, right? Jonathan, I see a lot of baristas around now. It's probably one of the second, you know, every second shop is probably a barista of sorts or a coffee shop of sorts. Everyone is trying to specialize in it and whatnot. What makes your business so different?
Yeah, I think I suppose what makes a difference is I didn't actually get into coffee because I was totally mad about coffee.
Yeah,
I sort of got into it a little bit sort of backwards. I've always loved coffee. My grandmother introduced me to coffee when I was about 12, so I've always had this love affair with coffee. But I never thought I'd make a business in coffee. And it was actually only when my wife and I took a year off to travel. And landed up in Canada, and I met a guy there who had a fair trade coffee business.
Yeah.
That I suddenly thought that there may be something that I could do in coffee that could fulfill one of my dreams, which was to make an impact on this continent that I love. So I landed up in coffee as a means to make a sustainable difference in the lives of small scale coffee farmers through our model of direct fair trade.
Yeah. Tell us about your continued travels, because you seem to continue to travel even now, despite the fact that you've, you know, garnered all the information you sort of needed, all the maybe ingredients, recipes, and perhaps even the equipment that you've bought, you know, some from Germany, some from wherever it might be. But tell us about your continued travels. What does that add to your business?
Yeah, so I think, you know, our model of being roasters of coffee, you really don't have to travel. You can essentially just order coffee from a green bean importer, roast it locally,
yeah,
and then supply it to your market. But because of our model of direct fair trade, I really wanted to get to know the countries and the communities that we were buying coffee from.
Mm.
So for me, it was really important to go to Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, and the DRC, the countries we buy from, and to make sure that we were buying amazing coffee, and that we were buying from communities that we could impact over the long term. And so, you know, we also wanted to make sure that when we're paying these fair trade prices and we're paying for quality, that when I sit down with a small scale farmer who's got 50 trees or 100 trees and a little family, that when I say to him, what are you getting paid for the coffee, and this is what I'm paying, that I can get confirmation and affirmation that that the money that we are paying is actually getting to the person who produced this incredible beverage.
How difficult is it with trade relations? You are speaking about quite a few countries that you do purchase from.
Yeah.
How difficult is it getting it out of there, communicating as well? Because these are not just Anglophone countries, but obviously Francophone as well.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose from a there certainly are some risks in terms of getting your coffee out. So we definitely deal with an exporter, and I'm probably a bit too scared to do that part all by myself.
I think
you can get properly burnt if you don't know what you're doing. And so I'm very much a believer in doing what you do well and letting other people do what they do well.
Yeah.
So we work with some great great guys who have a company that we work with, a company called Schluter, who's been doing involved in African coffee for about 150 years as a family business. So they've got a lot of experience in terms of working to get the coffee out. We let them do that, because otherwise, I mean, you hear of stories where you order a container of coffee and you end up with a container of sand, which when you've spent a few million rand on it would not be ideal.
Yeah, of course. Then how do you handle the risks then? How do you mitigate, shall we say, against those sort of risks? Like you said, risky in itself, sticking to what you do best. Yes, fine, you do have the exporter sort of helps you as well in that regard. But how do you mitigate against any form of fraudulent behavior, whether that be the case, a degrading of the quality perhaps of the coffee you buy?
Yeah, fortunately, I mean, coffee is quite well sort of regulated, in that the whole sort of process of getting coffee is that, when I deal with a cooperative, which represents probably 3,000, 4,000 small scale farmers sometimes, once they've got their coffee ready, they send me what we call an approval sample.
Okay.
And so we get that sample, we roast it, so it comes as green, and we roast it in a little sample roaster. roaster, and then we cup it, which is the process of tasting coffee. It's and then we evaluate it and say, this is amazing, we love it, it's got great florals or some berries or hazelnut notes or whatever it is. And then based on that, we commit to a container or as many bags of coffee. And then once that coffee arrives, we would then sample it again. So you've got sort of a little device that you poke into all these to multiple bags to sort of extract beans from multiple bags.
Okay.
And you then get what we call an arrival sample. And then we roast that in the same way. And then we compare what we approved and what arrived. And if there's any dispute there, it then goes to sort of the arbitration at the International Coffee Organization. And they've got a process where if there's a dispute, it would get settled.
Yeah. You do now have a place up in Joburg as well as one in Cape Town, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. How are things going on that front?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I started initially in my garage, I guess 13 years ago, and then into Kaya Sands for a little while in a friend's factory, and then we've been down at 44 Stanley, just down near the gasworks in Mill Park, for the last 2008. And then recent 2014 we opened up in Braamfontein, and most of our production happens now in our Braamfontein roast in Smith Street, just below Wits there.
Yeah.
And then in the middle there, 2011, we opened up down in Cape Town. So we have three roasting locations that we're operating from. And they're a great combination of factories. So we operate and produce and roast our coffee from them, but they also have espresso bars. So unfortunately, as a tea drinker, admitted tea drinker, you probably have not popped in for a little coffee.
I take it from my mom. Okay, look, I'm an avid red cappuccino and probably just pure rooibos drinker with honey in it as well. The coffee thing hasn't really been a thing in my family.
You'd be so disappointed at our shop.
Possibly. So
if rooibos comes anywhere near our espresso machine, I think our baristas would collapse.
Oh, jeez.
So,
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, tough one. How do you take, and this is perhaps a more philosophical story, if I want to call it that, but how do you take the stories that you learn in places that you buy your coffee from, whether it be from Kenya, whether it be from Ethiopia, wherever the case might be, how do you take those stories and try to mold them into the packaging or into your shops themselves as well? How does that come out in trying to ensure that you lure people in? Because it's no longer just about serving coffee, because anybody can now do that, right?
Absolutely.
So it becomes about the experience. So how do you make the experience a lot more intriguing and welcoming?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because we have these great stories, and one of the difficulties is trying to get those out to the market. Mm-hmm. We've tried to with media, obviously quite a lot of social media stuff, our Instagram and Twitter and website and everything tells a lot about that sort of the adventure aspects of our coffee. We try to tell a lot of those fair trade stories, we have quite a lot of cupping events where you get to tell some of those stories, it's just in interactions like this where I get to maybe mention to you the story of Agnes, one of our farmers, and those sort of things get out there, and then people buy into the why of our business, which is
who is Agnes?
Yeah, so Agnes, you got to have a favorite in life, and I've got a favorite farmer, and she is Agnes. I met her in 2007. She's in Kenya. And she probably best summarizes the story of fair trade and what our whole sort of model is about.
Yeah.
But when I met her in 2007, she had two kids, a son Telvin and a daughter Anne, and I really connected well with her. Sometimes you just sort of hit it off, and she mentioned in our first interaction that one of her kids was in school and one was not. And obviously, my natural reaction, as yours would probably be too, is just to say, hey, how can I sort this out? Can I pay for some fees? What can I do? And at that point, I sort of sat back and said, why I'm here is to trade fairly. That's the model of our business, is to trade fairly with Agnes. And if I do that well, Agnes will be able to look after her own kids, and she will be able to sort her own life out. And over the past, I suppose, 11 years now, we have traded with Agnes. She has put her own kids through school. Her son is studying in the military at the moment. Her daughter's working at a Vodafone shop in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And the contrast from when I sat with Agnes the first time and had tea with her in her hut on her property in Kenya to this last February when I sat with her. She has a brick house, roof, gutters, two cows outside. We sat on her couch with watching. She had sort of a she had her TV on in the background, but she's brought electricity to her own home. There was a Batman rerun sort of playing in the background. And we sat on her couch, and she showed me. We sat browsing photos of the last 10 years that I visited Agnes on her iPhone on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, the difference that fair trade, I mean, 100% that is not, you know, that is not all as a result of trading coffee. Agnes was an incredible farmer.
Yeah.
She got involved in promoter farming, so got really excited about helping herself farm better through good agronomy practices.
Yeah.
She increased her own yields, increased her own income, helped others, got identified as a leader, is now a district chief in her area. And wow. So she's taken responsibility for her own life, certainly. But it was really exciting to know that we played some small sort of part in that sort of transformation.
A bean at a time. Jonathan Robinson, founder at Bean There Coffee Company. We'll talk more coffee business right after this. Back onto Shapeshifters, Jonathan Robinson, who is the founder at Bean There Coffee Company. As you can hear, now we're trying to get that barista sort of fixing us a drink. Jonathan, let's just talk about, you know, where you sort of come from. You did IT, and yet you settled on a coffee business. How did you get that right?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I worked for IBM and iData, and I had an absolute blast. I mean, I loved it. I had a great time.
Mm.
But I guess it was a time when, while I was there, I realized that this wasn't exactly what I wanted to do with my life. And so I was just, I guess, looking for something else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was sort of forced by it came at a good time. The stock market crashed in 2001. And my share options at Didata at that point went down the tubes a bit.
Yeah.
And so I took that year off and then traveled with my wife. We did this 27,000K road trip through the US and Canada and then backpacked through Europe. And it was I was looking for what am I going to do next? You know, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? When I get older, you know, what I want to look back and say, this is what my life meant. So I suppose you're looking for that difference between success. I had success was IT boom days, success, and then I said, yeah, I want some significance. And that was really...
That was right after Y2K. It's so unfortunate, man. But okay, so you started the business officially in 2005.
Yeah.
That's nearly 13 years ago now, basically 13 years ago. Was the industry as populated as it is now?
Yeah, certainly not. I mean, I remember opening up our roastery in 44 Stanley and being, you know, people would come in and we'd pour a latte art, you know, a little heart or a fern in the cup, and, you know, they were absolutely amazed. You know, they would get their phones out, take a photo, show friends, you know, you'll never believe what I just saw. I mean, now you don't even look again. You just drink that fern. You know, someone does a beautiful swan. Sometimes you don't even look at the swan.
Yeah.
You know? So it's definitely changed. There's so many more roasters now in the market than there used to be. I wasn't very good about doing a whole lot of market research when I started. So it's not like I looked too hectically into how many there were, but I can tell you there's probably, three, they say now possibly up to three, you know, to 300 roasters in the country. I mean, I thought there was about 150,
double that at least.
It could be that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So upon startup, what were the biggest sort of issues you faced?
Yeah, I suppose at the beginning, it's, obviously cash is always something.
Yeah.
And cash is a problem.
How did you work around that one? I know it might be a little bit personal as well, but how did you work around that cash issue?
Yeah, I think I started with a little bit that I still had left after a year's worth of travel from the day to day. So I had a little bit left as a sort of a starting point. And then I got in a couple of shareholders. when we took that next leap, and that just helped to inject some, you know, some extra cash into the business. And then I was very fortunate, and then I have an amazing wife who has a great job, and she basically, you know, was able to support our whole family. Sure. Well, our whole family at the time was me and my daughter.
And wife, she
was able to support our family during those first sort of couple of years when you really aren't taking a salary. You know, you're doing everything, you're putting everything back into the business. You know, I was trying to do a bit of the accounting and the driving and the, you know, packing and a bit of everything.
Yeah.
Fortunately, my sister came back to join me, which was an amazing. So together, really, we built it. Yeah, built the business.
Yeah. Among local soccer circles, we would call you the Jomo Sono of your business very early on, considering that you pretty much did everything. You also, as we mentioned, you did travel a lot, and you continue to do so as well. Mm. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I think the firstly, I love travel. I mean, that's I think you also you really get a sense of a place when you travel. You know, to be able to, you know, if I'm going to convey, if I sit down and tell you about Ethiopian coffee, and I can tell you some of the aspects of the Ethiopian culture that make it so special, you know, you get a sense of the coffee. It's part of the brand. Yeah. You know, when I can only tell you how Ethiopian coffee culture, you know, brought that whole connection around people to the world. Mm. If I've been there and witnessed it myself and seen little coffee bars, you know, every few meters, and watched how Ethiopians connect around coffee and meet with their friends and say, well, look, this is the gift that Ethiopia has given to the rest of the world, the ability to connect around this beverage and to have, you know, first dates, business meetings, you know,
all around,
connect with friends, etc. So, you know, I think the travel does that. And then I guess, you know, as I mentioned, I feel it's really important to continually get stories, to be able to tell those. I think sometimes as well, you know, when you get a little bit tired, and sometimes you get a little bit down about what you're doing, and because our business is what I would call a sort of a social enterprise. You know, we're not driven hectically by profit. We're driven by making a difference in the lives of producers.
Yeah.
Sometimes when things are a bit tight, and you sit back and you say, what am I doing? You know, why does it keep coming? You know, why am I looking at a negative number here? Sure. And someone says, well, you pay too much for your green coffee. You know, if you bought cheaper coffee, you'd make more margin.
Yeah.
And then when I go and spend time in a producing country, and I see the impact that us paying great prices has on the community, and I sit back and say, well, this is why I'm in business. It motivates you. So you come back super excited and inspired and, you know, saying, I'm on my way to change the world.
You know? Greatest sacrifice. Yeah. What has that been?
Greatest sacrifice. I suppose in the early days, it was probably, working on weekends.
Those are prized positions.
I wasn't used to
too.
That, you know. Yeah. I mean, you come out of a corporate world, you know, Saturday and Sunday are your days.
Yeah.
You know, and in order to make that business work, you know, I was there in the roastery, just about every Saturday in the beginning, then started sharing a little bit with my sister.
Yeah.
So that was probably some of that. And then, you know, when you come out of I had a great job in IT, and suddenly, you know, you sort of downgrade everything, you know. So I moved, you know, we sold our cars, and we're sort of trying to get as much money into the business. So, you know, driving around in a small little Toyota Taz, and kid in there, as well as coffee for deliveries. And, you know, I'm thinking, I just gave up my corporate job and my career and whatever to do this. Have I made a
putting
dreadful mistake?
Here, you know? Right?
So I suppose those are some of the, they're always going to be sacrifices along the way, for sure.
And your biggest lesson then?
Well, I mean, I probably make this statement quite often, which is, certainly not mine, I forget who gave it to me, but you know, the lesson of turnover is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash flow is reality. And cash flow is such an important part of your business.
Say that again. So, I probably need to write that down somewhere.
So the turnover is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash flow is reality.
Sure.
And yeah, you can be, you can have great turnover, but if you don't have profit, you're in trouble. And then if nobody pays you, you don't have any cash. And, you know, so that's a big, I think that's probably a big lesson.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this another another struggle we've had, which we had to come to terms with, is the depreciating rand over the time we've been in business.
Mm.
So, you know, all coffee is traded in dollars. So the coffee, you know, coffee price is set in dollars. And so, you know, you buy coffee in the beginning of the year and you start paying for it and it just starts costing you more.
Oh,
and so you just see, but as you go through your 12-month cycle, how your margins are just being eroded. You know, you set it at a point and they disappear all by themselves.
Sure.
And it's very difficult during the year just to suddenly, you know, keep increasing the coffee price. I'd love to be able to have done it like you do fuel, but, you know, people don't accept that. They want to, you're locked in for a period of time. So your margins are often under pressure as a result of that.
Okay, well, Jonathan, if as a tea drinker, your recommendation, if you were to try and turn me in any way, how would you do that?
Yeah, I would say that you probably just have not had some really great coffee.
So what would you recommend?
Because I think what has happened probably for you is that coffee for far too long has been roasted really dark and is really bitter. So you probably find that when you've picked up a cup of coffee and drank it, you said, this is bitter. You've put in three sugars to try and make it sort of, you know, palatable.
Okay.
And you sort of drank it begrudgingly, possibly for the caffeine content to keep you awake.
Yeah.
So I think the joy of really great coffee, so high quality coffee, well roasted, so not over roasted, brings out some incredible sweetness. And then if you have a really great barista, who is able to froth milk well and bring out the sweetness and the proteins in the milk, you land up with this wonderful strength in the coffee being complemented by the sweetness in the milk, and you have this beautiful beverage. So you're going to have to come and see if we can turn you.
Gee whiz. Okay, so what's the first one you'd recommend then? Is it just a normal cappuccino or, you know,
yeah, I mean, from a
latte?
I'd say a cappuccino, if it's the coffee flavor that you've liked, or if it's the strength of it that you haven't liked, then usually a cappuccino is sort of an easier, softer introduction into coffee.
Okay.
And then the journey of coffee is actually starting to reduce the milk and certainly reduce the sugar.
Yeah.
And once you get that right, then you start to appreciate the flavors. I mean, that's sort of what my grandmother got me to do when I was 12, which is take out the sugar and then you'll taste the coffee.
Jonathan Robinson, founder at Been There Coffee Company. You've certainly perked my interest in coffee. Certainly. Thank you so, so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All the best as well, not just for now, but always. Maybe more than just another 13 years ahead for your business.